Good morning. The May 27, 2022 Operations and Customer Service Committee will now begin. Please mute your phones and turn your attention to the public safety announcement.
At New Jersey Transit, your safety is our highest priority. Please listen to these safety instructions in case of an emergency. In an emergency, announcements will be made over the loudspeaker or by a uniformed police officer. The primary exit for this location is the stairwell adjacent to the elevators, which can be located by exiting the boardroom and proceeding through the glass doors. There is a second alternate staircase that can be accessed through the door at the front of this room to the right behind the board dais. New Jersey Transit Police will call 911, administer CPR, and use the defibrillator located near the elevator if necessary. Fire extinguishers are located in the front and back of this room. Please be guided by the directions of the New Jersey Transit Police and staff. Thank you and have a safe day.
I will now take roll call. Board Member Giblin?
Here.
Vice Chair Fulton?
Here.
Board Member Brown?
Here.
Board Member Nara?
Here.
Board Member Thomas?
Here.
For the record, Board Member Giblin, Vice Chair Fulton, Board Member Nara, and Board Member Thomas are participating remotely. Board Member Gordon is absent from today's meeting. There are no in-person speakers, and there are two pre-registered telephone speakers. Priority access will be given to the pre-registered telephone participants, followed by any additional telephone participants who are queued to speak. Those participating by telephone, if you have not already done so, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue to speak. You will hear a brief tone to indicate you have successfully entered the queue. Operator, we would now like to open the floor for public comments by telephone participants, beginning with those who pre-registered to speak.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you have not already done so, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue to speak. You will hear a brief tone to indicate you have successfully entered the queue. Each speaker will be given 2 minutes for their public comment. A warning will be provided with 1 minute remaining, and again with 15 seconds remaining. And there are three speakers in queue. Your first public comment is coming from Erica Gould. Erica, your line is live and your time will now begin.
Hi, everyone. I'm commenting today in support of the proposed mask car, which would be one car per train in which everyone must wear a face mask. First, I want to remind everyone that most face masks are designed to protect other people from the mask wearer, not the other way around. That's why it's not enough for a vulnerable rider to just wear their own mask in a group of unmasked individuals. I've been reading a lot of the articles in the media and trying to take note of what the agency or the conductors union are talking about as to what the obstacles are to implementing this mask car. And I have read that some of your conductors are saying that enforcement would be too difficult. Then you know what? Don't enforce it beyond signs. I think that would be enough because even if most, if not all, but not all riders comply, that's still a huge improvement over the environment as it is now.
One
Don't underestimate the importance of that for people who are high risk or live with high risk individuals. I would appreciate if during this meeting someone could respond to this comment and update me on the status of your consideration of the mask car proposal. It's not difficult to implement. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next public comment is coming from Adam Reich. Adam, your line is live, and your time will now begin.
Good morning. I want to again urge my support for a mask car pilot program at the very least. I do want to thank the board members who have expressed their support for this in the past and ask staff to consider it. I hope you know that I think you are doing your due diligence. My concern is the lack of responsiveness from staff on this. So board members, I would ask importantly, where do we stand on this? Are you satisfied with the staff response? Mr. Corbett signaled a willingness at the last Operations and Customer Service Committee meeting on April 29th to have a dialogue about this, but then he turned around the following Monday, April 2nd, telling the Assembly Committee nothing was under consideration. Are you satisfied with that? Are you satisfied with any consideration that's been given to this option since then, particularly as yesterday the New Jersey Department of Health stated that 21 out of 21 New Jersey counties are now at high COVID activity levels. CDC says 9 counties are high activity levels, recommending masking on board.
1 minute remaining.
It's important to note that after the last board meeting, the Washington Metropolitan Authority, Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority said they're seriously considering the idea. They claimed they had spoken with staff at New Jersey Transit about the idea. Agency spokesman denied that. Even if that's true, shouldn't staff now reach out to Washington Metro and see if they can work together on this idea? Again, even if we try it without enforcement, I think it's still a better option. An 80% mask car is better than 50. Staff, I think they're looking at the equity issues in the wrong way. Where you offer a reasonable accommodation, you do so. You know, in the case of rail versus bus and light rail, it's easier and more practicable to offer it on rail. We wouldn't offer it on rail because we wouldn't offer, couldn't do it on buses and light rail. But like saying we're not going to offer level boarding at high-level platforms at train stations anymore because we have low-level platforms at some stations. It just misses the mark, especially for somebody who's immunocompromised and really has no option under the current arrangement. I would just ask, too, I've been hearing some things attributed to staff. I would encourage a dialogue because I think it's important that we clear up any misconceptions and see whether what I'm hearing raises any oversight issues. And finally, if the board secretary could confirm, Suzanne Mack at the last board meeting said that the advisory committees would be happy to speak to me. I have not heard from them, so can you confirm if the committee was given my contact information and if there's some way to give me an appropriate contact for them so we can discuss this and, you know, some of the other things that might be relevant to the advisory committee. I think it would be important and it would certainly be appreciated. So again, board members, any update you could provide would be appreciated. And I, again, thank you for your support all along the way.
Thank you. And there is one more public comment in queue at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, you can still enter the queue for public comments by pressing star one on your phone at any time. And the next public comment is coming from Sally Jane Garrett. Sally, your line is live and your time will now begin.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Sally Gellert, the chairperson of the Lackawanna Coalition. At our meeting held this past Monday, May 23rd, we passed a resolution in support of the mass car pilot project and having a mass car, mass mandatory car on each train. We think that it is a reasonable accommodation that, as Adam just said, is zero cost or next to zero cost. It provides protection for the most vulnerable riders who have no other options than taking a train and maybe living with someone who is particularly vulnerable, who may be particularly vulnerable themselves. It is like the quiet car. It is self-selecting. If somebody walks into a quiet car and uses a phone and is told, you know, this is not the place, they're usually very willing to, you know, get up and move to the next car or turn off the phone. And I think you would find the same thing with a mass mandatory car. Certain board members have indicated interest in this, and I think it's all in all, it's a good thing. There was a Star Ledger editorial in support of it. Nationally, apparently, this split is about 52 in favor, 24 against the mandatory masks on transit. So basically that's it. We're in support, and we'd like to see this implemented, at least on a pilot basis, as soon as reasonably possible. Thank you.
Thank you. And there were no other public comments at this time.
Thank you, public speakers. Do any board members have any comments? If there are no comments by any board member, Nara, do you have a comment?
Yes, Megan?
Yes.
Megan, I just want to make a comment. To address the issue with the mask car, I think as some of the speakers know, some of the board members, we've been supportive of it. We have received, a briefing from staff, and I understand there's a lot of concerns, especially with our employees. I will just say that I speak for myself. I'm not going to speak for the other board members, but I do still feel that we should do this as a pilot program. And I agree. I don't expect our employees to have to enforce this. And the same way that they don't really police the quiet cars. And so I think some of us will continue to talk to staff to see if this is a possibility. I very much understand everyone's concerns, especially for people who have their own vulnerabilities or live with people who have vulnerabilities like I do. So I hope we can still get to some, resolution of this in a way that addresses people's concerns on a pilot basis, at least. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other board member comments? Hearing none, we'll move on. The first staff report is the Operations and Customer Service update. Anthony Greco.
Thank you, Megan. Good afternoon, board members and members of the public joining us today. We'll be presenting the April Operations and Customer Service Committee report this morning. Deanna Sumner from my team, who heads up customer service, will moderate and provide the customer service updates. And the heads from each of the operating divisions will report out on their respective areas. With that, I'd ask everyone to turn to the next page, and I'll turn it over to Jim Sincaglia to begin with the rail report. Jim?
Thank you, Anthony. In April, rail ridership has remained relatively consistent since March. Weekday rail ridership is more than 55% of pre-COVID levels. Average rail ridership on weekends is up much higher than weekdays at approximately 70 to 80%, with some trains at 100%. Starting with the charts for rail, on-time performance overall was 94.8% in April, slightly above our goal of 94.7%, and an improvement from 93.1% in March. On the equipment side, mean distance between failure was 69,751 miles in April, down from 71,219 miles in March. Moving to the next slide. For April, there were 107 cancellations, which was a significant reduction in cancellations from 278 last month. While mechanical-related issues made up the largest portion of cancellations this month, at 73, that number also marks a slight decrease from last month, which was at 76. The 107 cancellations in April represent just 0.6% of the 17,734 scheduled trains. However, we understand the impact of what just one train cancellation has on customers who depend on that specific train, and we will continue to work hard to reduce the number of cancellations. Moving to the next slide, moving to rail performance by terminal and time, New York Penn Station trains reported overall on-time performance of 93.7 in April, up from 91.3 in March. Hoboken Terminal trains reported overall on-time performance of 96.1% in April, up from 94.8% in March. System-wide trains reported peak period on-time performance of 95.3% in April, up from 92.6% in March. Off-peak on-time performance was 94.9% in April, up from 93% in March. And weekend service on-time performance was 93.7% in April, down from 94.4% in March. Overall, for April, we saw on-time performance improvements in nearly all categories. Moving to the next slide, for trips annulled canceled. For trip cancellation feedback, more than 70% of customer comments were regarding the Morrison-Essex lines and Northeast Corridor. Most of the comments were regarding service on April 28th and April 30th. On April 28th, there was a brush fire near Secaucus Junction that led to cancellations and delays. On April 30th, there was Amtrak maintenance in one of the Hudson River tunnels and a disabled train at Penn Station, New York that impacted service. where action's taken. We widely communicate all cancellations and suspensions from the onset of an event until service is restored using every available customer communication channel. When a train becomes disabled, we respond quickly to move the equipment and resume service through the area. For the incident on April 30th, we're able to accommodate customers with the next scheduled train. For incidents where first responders are deployed, such as the brush fire near Secaucus, we work closely with partner agencies so that life safety issues are resolved and service can be resumed as quickly as possible. These types of incidents can make it difficult to predict when service restoration is expected. However, customers are regularly updated as new information becomes available. For trip delayed, customer comments regarding delays were most prevalent for the Northeast Corridor, North Jersey Coastline, and Raritan Valley Line, making up nearly 60% of the total comments. There were multiple comments regarding delays on April 2nd, April 7th, and April 28th. For April 2nd, contributing factors were Amtrak program maintenance, a Conrail equipment failure, and the ongoing Laurel Avenue bridge repair work on the North Jersey coastline. On April 7th, Amtrak maintenance, an Amtrak switch failure in New York, and a bridge strike in Rollway contributed to delays. On April 28th, the fire near Secaucus caused 48 delays. For actions taken, in all instances, customers are advised of delays using a variety of channels, including announcements, email, text and mobile alerts, social media posts, and web postings. We also maintain close contact with our partner agencies as they work to restore issues on their system that impact our service, and we communicate with our customers throughout to provide updates as the issues are remediated. When planned maintenance is required by our partner agencies to maintain a state of good repair, we work closely with them to minimize disruptions and impacts to the greatest extent possible. We work with them to schedule the projects, communicate the impacts and potential for delays as far in advance as possible. For the brush fire near Secaucus, rail tickets and passes were cross-honored by PATH at Newark Penn Station, Hoboken and 33rd Street, New York, and New Jersey Transit bus and private carriers. Due to the extent of the cancellations and suspensions, service then operated with residual delays after service was restored. I also want to provide a quick update on the repairs to the Laurel Ave Bridge in Holmdel. You recall that the bridge was damaged following a truck strike on March 4th, requiring substantial work to repair, and the work also required some minor adjustments to the North Jersey Coastline rail schedule, as well as a temporary closure of Laurel Ave. I'm pleased to report that the repairs were completed on Saturday, May 21st, and the Laurel Avenue roadway reopened on Sunday, May 22nd. We will be returning to the regular rail schedule beginning Tuesday, May 31st. And before I turn it back over to Deanna, I want to share a brief summary of two incidents that occurred on the Northeast Corridor on Saturday, May 21st. At approximately 11:11 a.m., train 7824 stopped just west of Newark Penn Station after losing power. The crew inspected the equipment and found a damaged pantograph on cars 1392 and 1393, and the crew reported approximately 1,000 customers on board. New Jersey Transit Police responded to assist, and passengers from train 7824 were picked up by train 7224, 7826, and a passenger extra. By a little after 1 p.m., the final passenger transferred to the last rescue train and completed their journey. The second incident occurred at approximately 11:37 a.m. when train 7828 stopped at Metuchen after losing power. The crew inspected the equipment and found pantograph damage on engine 4606. The crew reported 600 passengers on board. Passengers from train 7828 were picked up by train 7830 at Metuchen, utilizing the low-level platforms. The cause of the pantograph damage on both trains was a damaged Amtrak catenary hanger on track 1 at milepost 27.5. Now, moving to the next slide, I'll turn it over to Dion.
Thank you, Jim. New Jersey Transit is headed to Monmouth Park Racetrack this season with a great discount package. Rail service for the 2022 season was back with the return of live racing on May 7th. New Jersey Transit continues to take North Jersey Coastline trains to Monmouth Park Station when the track is open for live racing. This year, live racing runs through September 18th. We also introduced a new Monmouth Park discount package, which includes discounted round-trip transportation, general admission, and an official racing program.
The cost is only the price of the round-trip fare plus $3.50, a total savings of $6.50 off the face value if purchased separately. The package is available from ticket vending machines or any New Jersey Transit train station ticket office. Moving to the next slide. In April, social media featured posts congratulating one of our newest locomotive engineers, as well as transit information at your fingertips at New Brunswick Station. Our post celebrating new engineer Dinelle Oliveira and featuring her on video was among our most viewed posts in April. We also posted about the installation of a new interactive transit kiosk at our New Brunswick Station. These kiosks connect customers with the latest service information, news, and other important messages, and are being installed at stations across the system. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Mike Kilcoyne for the bus report.
Thank you, Deanna. System-wide bus ridership is at nearly 70% of pre-COVID levels, with ridership into New York at approximately 65%, and local bus service within New Jersey at approximately 75% of pre-COVID levels. Moving to the bus charts, on-time performance was 95.4% in April, down from 96.3% in March, but well above our goal of 90%. As I will cover on the trend slide, there were several noteworthy incidents impacting service. On-time performance for our major terminals in April were as follows. Port Authority bus terminals performance was 93.4% in April, down from 95.4% in March. Hoboken terminals on-time performance was 96.9%, down from 98.1%. Atlantic City on-time performance was 97.3%, down from 97.4%. Newark Penn Station on-time performance was 97.2%, down from 98.3%. Walker Ranch Transportation Center was 97.5%, up from 95.4%. And Irvington Bus Terminal's on-time performance was 94.9, down slightly from 95.1. Moving to the next slide, trip no-show comments were primarily related to operator availability. The comments were most predominant in the Northern Division, with the remainder spread evenly between Central and Southern Divisions. Oradell Garage Service had the most trip no-show feedback, much of it related to operator availability. Many comments related to no-shows and late buses were related to the flooding on the garage access roads on April 8th, that also led to delays in that area. Greater than forecasted rain impacted the Oradell Garage and surrounding area on the morning of Friday, April 8th. As the Oradell Garage was inaccessible, operators arriving for work were dispatched to other area bus garages to pull out buses to perform their assignments. We evacuated the garage by that afternoon and operated full service from our remote location throughout the weekend and moved back into the Oradell Garage on Monday, April 11th. We utilize every available customer communication channel to provide information to customers when their trip is impacted, including email and text alerts, customized push notifications via our mobile app, and social media messaging. We continue to work aggressively to recruit bus operators, employing a wide variety of marketing tactics to highlight our bus operator career opportunity, including direct mail to target more than 150,000 CDL holders in the state of New Jersey, highlighting our $6,000 hiring bonus to persons with a CDL, and a $3,000 hiring bonus for persons with a CDL permit. We continue to partner with the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission to expedite CDL permitting appointments and hosting permit testing at our Ferry Street facility, and we continue to conduct on-site CDL road tests. Trip delay feedback was primarily related to service in the Northern Division. On April 4th, a motor vehicle accident closed all lanes at the George Washington Bridge, affecting AM peak service, which also resulted in heavy traffic and up to 45-minute delays at the Lincoln Tunnel. On April 6, 20, 22, 29, and 30, traffic at the Port Authority Bus Terminal and feeder roads, including 495, experienced heavy traffic related to congestion, accidents, and disabled vehicles in or near the tunnel, and a bus fire in a North Bergen storage yard. In addition, the paving and closure of Anderson Avenue in Fort Lee on April 11th caused major delays. As noted, on April 8th, a flash flood impacted Oradell Garage service and caused delays and detours throughout Bergen County. In all instances, we attempt to mitigate delays and their impact on customers by ensuring operators are apprised of traffic conditions and issues in real time. Customers are advised of delays using a variety of channels, including announcements, text alerts, social media posts, email advisories, and web postings. Moving to the next slide, I'll turn it back over to Deanna.
Thank you, Mike. Social media is a critical component of our bus communication efforts. We continue to leverage social media to amplify our recruiting and hiring messages for both bus operators and bus maintenance personnel, including our $6,000 sign-on bonus. We also use social media to encourage customer input and feedback. We posted on the Greater New Brunswick Transportation Study Survey as part of our studying the existing transportation network in that area and identifying data-backed solutions to address local travel needs and traffic congestion. We also posted to encourage participation in our Trans-Hudson Bus Survey on board and throughout the Port Authority Bus Terminal. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Ron Nichols for the light rail report.
Thank you, Deanna. Overall, light rail on-time performance was 97.3% in April, up from 95.7% in March, and meeting our goal of 97.3%. Light rail ridership is at approximately 75% of pre-COVID levels. By line, on-time performance for April is as follows. Hudsonburg and light rail on-time performance was 97.4% in April, up from 95.9% in March. Newark Light Rail on-time performance was 98.4% in April, up from 95.4% in March. Riverline on-time performance was 96.1% in April, up slightly from 95.9% in March. Light rail equipment reliability, measured as mean distance between failures, or MDBF, is as follows. Newark Light Rail MDBF was 4,619 miles in April, up from 4,390 miles in March. Hudsonburg and Light Rail MDBF was 91,244 miles in April, down from 92,057 miles in March. Riverline MDBF was 22,422 miles in April, up from 21,588 miles in March. Moving to the next slide. Trip delay feedback was received primarily for the Newark Light Rail and HBLR. For the Newark Light Rail, the comments were related to the late March track damage near Orange Street Station, we reported on last month, as full service was restored on April 2nd. For HBLR, we received comments on April 22nd that were related to police activity at Westside Avenue and 8th Street stations, as well as on April 23rd and April 25th, when in separate incidents, trucks were fouling the tracks. As reported last month, Newark Light Rail Track Department, working closely with our rail operations staff, and repairs commenced immediately. Repairs were completed by March 31st, inspections were done on April 1st, and full service was restored on April 2nd. The work was extensively communicated, including station and onboard announcements, as well as notifications to customers via social media, text, email, and push notifications through the mobile app. For the HBLR, we work closely with New Jersey Transit Police Department to remediate issues and with operations and first responders to work as quickly as possible to remove vehicles and restore regular service. While the HBLR delays were not widespread or severe, the service delays were widely communicated through all available communication channels. With respect to ticket purchases and TVMs, customer comments regarding ticket validators that were not operating at Roebling Station on the River Line, and for ticket vending machines, TVMs, on HBLR, when an issue became apparent early in March where some TVMs were not printing or issuing monthly passes or tickets. The actions taken, based on initial reports of any malfunctioning TVM or validator, violations are suspended for customers boarding from the affected stations. Validator instances and TVM issues are reported immediately to the line superintendent and TVM help desk and are typically rectified on the same day. The validators at Roebling Station were found to be vandalized in separate instances with tickets jammed in the machines. In each case, the machines were restored to service on the same day. For HBLR, we quickly identified the issue with HBLR tickets when stopped, when passes were curling in the machine and jamming the machines and preventing them from being printed. The crew was quickly dispatched and made hardware changes on the TVMs throughout the HBLR service to address the issue. While this was an isolated incident on the HBLR, we continued proactively monitoring other TVMs across the entire system. Moving to the next slide, I'll turn it back over to Deanna. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. In April, our social media efforts for Light Rail kept customers informed about projects and service updates. For the Newark Light Rail, we posted regarding boarding changes and schedule adjustments due to scheduled track maintenance work on April 23rd and 24th. For the Hudson Bergen Light Rail, we issued posts regarding schedule adjustments and a bus bridge on April 30th and May 1st between Liberty State Park, Jersey Avenue, Marin Boulevard, and Essex Street stations due to track work. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Namika Parker for the Access Link report.
Thank you, Deanna. Access Link on-time performance was 86.9% in April, which was up from 83.4% in March. Ridership was 106,512, down slightly from March, and is likely attributed to the recent uptick in COVID cases. The total number of customer cases for April was 284, which was less than the 355 in March. The top concerns were service delays with 162 cases, which is an improvement from the 208 in March, and scheduled service with 30, which I will speak to on the next slide. We received 129 commendations for the month of April, and 55 of these commendations were for our Access Link operation staff. An example of a commendation we received includes customer D. Hargroves. The customer called to commend agent 156, Teresa. He said that he has Tourette's syndrome, and today was a very bad day for getting his words out. Teresa was extremely patient with him, and it made him feel complete. Moving to the next slide. Service delays. A significant portion of these complaints came from customers in our Region 5 and Region 6 service areas. We have seen increased traffic and congestion in these regions. In addition, the service providers continued the recruiting and onboarding of drivers with CDLs, which remains a challenge industry-wide. While our service providers are not back to pre-COVID driver levels, they are making progress and steadily increasing the available number of operators. Efforts to increase sign-on bonuses and offer referral bonuses for drivers are ongoing. We are aggressively recruiting by attending local and in-house job fairs, as well as advertising in non-traditional locations, such as convenience stores and outside New Jersey motor vehicle offices. We utilize multiple communication methods to advise customers when their pickup arrival is delayed, from telephone calls up to and including travel alerts and advisories, public messaging, Access Link social media, and Access Link online. We continue to focus on all situations that are preventable and within our control to ensure our service providers proactively focus on reducing negative customer experiences. We have added trips during peak hours to coincide with an uptick in ridership and traffic congestion. Scheduled service. Scheduled service feedback was primarily regarding customers' complaints that vehicles did not arrive timely for pickup. On most occasions, the vehicle arrived outside of the allotted 30-minute window, and the customer decided not to travel or found alternate travel to their destinations. We also identified some examples of errors made by the reservationist, as well as by customers providing incorrect reservation information, which we address as soon as they are identified. This moment is then used in our training and customer education efforts. Actions taken. Service controllers are reminded of the importance of notifying operations staff of delays and updating customer rides with delay information. Our service providers are also working to increase staffing in critical areas of their operations, including service control. Increasing the number of service controllers on duty will provide more oversight to the service on the road and ideally is expected to reduce the number of these occurrences. We instruct staff on how to mitigate or reduce the risk of reservation errors and proactively verify trip details. Moving to the next slide. Social media is an important communication tool, and we continue to promote Access Link on social media. In April, we launched a new digital reservation form. This idea was created, tested, and implemented by the Access Link operations team. It is very user-friendly and intended to help our customers get more accustomed to navigating technology. The feedback from the users is overwhelmingly positive and credited with encouraging our customers and gaining confidence with the other technologies we offer. We want to thank the pilot test group, which included members of the Citizen Advisory Committee, the National Federation for the Blind of New Jersey, and other Access Link customers. In April, we also promoted our participation in the Mini Family Festival hosted by the New Jersey First Lady Tammy Murphy, the Southern New Jersey Family Medical Center, and the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission. The focus was on assisting expectant mothers as they learned about and applied for transportation services. Moving to the next slide, I will turn it over to Deanna. Thank you.
Thank you, Namika. Customer service received 43,331 calls in April. The 13-month rolling average was 43,972 calls. The average speed of answer for the Transit Information Center was 5 seconds, meeting our goal of 5 seconds. The agents answered 99% of the calls in April, meeting our goal of 99%. Moving to the next slide. New Jersey Transit received 85 commendations system-wide for April. I will want to highlight the positive impact our staff has on the individual customer experience, in this case, a bus customer. Bus operator Namil Lowe, although new to my route, has already made a strong impression on me. He's always prompt to the point where on days that I may be running late, I know for a fact that if I don't get to my stop on time, I'll likely miss him. He's that accurate with his schedule, and it's something that I very much appreciate. On top of always being on time, he also has an amazing personality, which makes the commute all around more enjoyable. On one particular morning, I fell over a broken sidewalk on the way to the bus stop. Upon communicating my unfortunate circumstance to this operator, he was kind enough to ask if I were okay and offered me cleansing wipes to clean myself up, which was greatly appreciated. I tip my hat to this operator, and I sincerely hope that he can be acknowledged by his superiors at New Jersey Transit on behalf of a grateful customer. Moving to the next slide. On this page, we'll review social media reach and engagement. In April, New Jersey Transit social media messages were seen over 4.5 million times, which generated over 90,000 engagements and more than 32,000 visits to njtransit.com. During the month of April, the social media team sent 4,737 messages. This number represents a combination of informational posts and responses to customer inquiries. You will note spikes in engagement on the following dates. On April 4th and 5th, the New Jersey Transit mobile app experienced an issue with the mobile ticketing feature, MyTix, that I will speak to shortly. On April 7th and 8th, our posts on the Portal Bridge notice to proceed garnered a great deal of attention. On April 13th, we posted regarding the new New Jersey Transit fare card press release. On April 18th, we posted congratulating one of our newest locomotive engineers and included a video, which resulted in a significant number of views. On April 28th and 29th, our post regarding the New Brunswick bus survey and the brush fire near Secaucus that was discussed earlier were widely viewed. Regarding the fairly widespread MyTix issue on April 4th and 5th, I offer the following. On April 4th at 6:30 a.m., we experienced technical issues that were affecting MyTix users. Some customers were unable to purchase tickets or passes, while some others were not able to activate or display a ticket or pass they had already purchased. We quickly communicated with operations so conductors, bus operators, and light rail fare enforcement personnel were made aware of the issue and allowed customers to ride without penalty if they indicated an issue with their mobile ticket. We also immediately voided or reversed charges for incomplete or unused purchases. This issue was resolved at 8:45 a.m. and was attributed to an internal server issue. On April 5th at 6:15 a.m., the issue reemerged and we worked quickly to develop a solution. Again, we advised frontline operations staff so customers would be able to travel without penalty. A fix was put in place at 9:30 a.m. to address the issue, and a further upgrade was completed by 11:30 a.m. on April 5th that offered a more permanent solution. We also took steps to promptly void or reverse charges for incomplete or unused purchases that were impacted by this issue. Moving to the next slide. New Jersey Transit has launched two new technology-focused initiatives to help customers navigate travel on the system as safely and efficiently as possible. Our two new technology initiatives are focused on maximizing the accessibility of public transportation to the greatest extent possible. First, through a new partnership with Magnus Mood, New Jersey Transit will assist neurodiverse customers with the help of Magnus, an illustrated character within the free Magnus Cards app. The app combines the specialized instruction with real-world images to aid neurodiverse customers, such as those who are autistic, who could use extra guidance navigating everyday experiences on public transit. Specifically, the partnership with Magnus Mood initially creates a set of 5 Magnus Card decks to guide individuals through various aspects of riding New Jersey Transit buses. Each deck provides step-by-step visual, audio, and text instructions that set expectations and ease anxiety. Funding for Magnus Mood was provided by the Senior Citizen and Disabled Resident Transportation Assistance Program, known as SCATTERTAP. SCATTERTAP was created by the state to assist counties throughout New Jersey with their community-based transportation services for disabled or senior residents and to provide resources for increasing the accessibility of New Jersey Transit services. Customers can learn more and find links to download the app at www.njtransit.com/magnusmode. New Jersey Transit has also revamped its accessibility-related website content and user experience, now available at www.njtransit.com/accessibility. The webpage features a new overview video about the many services and features of New Jersey Transit that make it accessible and inviting to all individuals, as well as easy-to-use links to specific information and informational videos, which are captioned in 6 languages in addition to English. The videos, which were funded by the Federal Transit Administration's Access and Mobility Partnership grants, cover several topics, including information about vehicle and station accessibility, the reduced fare program, community transportation services, and our AccessLink paratransit service, including AccessLink Online, where AccessLink customers can manage their reservations and accounts. These initiatives, along with others still in progress, all help New Jersey Transit achieve its goal of offering all of its customers an efficient, safe, inclusive, and effective way to travel. Moving to the next slide. Our social media highlights included posts on promotions, potential savings, and providing customer support. We posted advising baseball fans that they can visit njtransit.com/baseball for a listing of baseball parks in our region, some of which are NJT Rewards partners, such as the Trenton Thunder and Somerset Patriots, which are accessible by public transit. We posted on and promoted FlexPass. Our FlexPass ticketing option surpassed $2.3 million in sales for the month of April, with 23,283 FlexPasses, 465,660 tickets sold, our best month to date. FlexPass sales have generated nearly $23 million in total revenue since the ticket option launched and is becoming an increasingly popular ticket option for our customers. We issued posts alerting customers of potential savings of $900 a year by using pre-tax dollars to pay for New Jersey Transit tickets or parking. We posted regarding our first run blog that highlighted the New Jersey Transit Ambassador and Emergency Response Team program, which provides customers with assistance during major planned and unplanned events. Moving to the next slide. Our social media posts included NJT Rewards, which has celebrated its 1-year anniversary and in just 1 year has become extremely popular with customers and businesses. Since the launch of the rewards program, more than 136,708 customers have signed up to participate and 127 businesses have partnered with us on the program. The program offers customer discounts at retail, dining, and entertainment venues across the state, including New York City, by redeeming points they earn for every ticket purchase made on the mobile app. Given our commitment to promoting a sustainable future, we posted to celebrate Earth Day as well as encouraging feedback in our sustainability survey. As customers return to our system, it's important to remember that New Jersey Transit service alone allows our state to avoid approximately 6.3 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions every year by providing a safe, affordable, and much more environmentally friendly alternative to the car. Throughout April, New Jersey Transit offered various promotions for its customers to go green and save money, inviting new customers to see for themselves how safe, convenient, and affordable the transit system is. In April, We also posted to celebrate Take Your Daughters and Sons to Work Day. A special edition of New Jersey Transit's Family Super Saver Fair was in effect that day, offering each fare-paying adult the opportunity to bring two children under the age of 18 for free on April 28th. Moving to the next slide. Our New Jersey Transit Police Department continues its strong social media presence, but more importantly, its outstanding work and efforts in keeping our system and communities safe. NJTPD posts included one on Police Officer Saletti, who was presented the 200 Club of Hudson County Valor Award. He was recognized for the selfless actions he took in an attempt to rescue a man in the Hudson River. On April 26th, the New Jersey Transit Police posted regarding NJTPD officers locating a man wanted for bank robbery, burglaries, and aggravated assault. NJTPD officers Castillo, Tejada, and Sergeant Krause were able to identify the man while on a routine tour of duty. Now I would like to turn it over to Chief Trusillo for an update on the NJTPD initiatives.
Thank you, Deanna. I appreciate it. While the weather is getting warmer, our outreach officers still do their work across all our facilities. And during the month of May, they were able to engage with 238 people. And I'm happy to report that at least 57 accepted services from the officers. I'm also happy to report that we deployed Narcan to those people who suffered overdoses while in our facilities 15 times, and 15 times we got a positive response and were able to save somebody from that. Also, this May, we're running 38% lower in Part 1 crimes over last May of 2021. And finally, for the committee, I just, in light of the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, this week, I wanted to assure the committee that counterterrorism is the number one priority of our police department here in New Jersey Transit, and we train constantly in that mission. Every New Jersey Transit police officer receives training on how to respond to an active shooter incident. Since 2018, every new transit police officer receives a 4-day training block on nothing but active shooter and responding to active shooter. Every officer in the field carries personal tourniquets, quick clot, and chest seals, and they've received tactical combat casualty care training to deal with victims who may be inflicted with a gunshot wound. In fact, we've partnered with probably the premier trainer in the nation for active shooter training. And we're gonna, in July, we have scheduled every police officer to receive one full day of tactical training in linear environments, and those are environments on rail cars and in buses. So this is something that we take seriously, we train for it, we prepare for it, and I just wanted the public and the committee to know. Diana, thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Chief. Moving to the next slide. And we'll close with a slide that illustrates the press releases we issued during the month of April, all of which I covered in last month's and this month's report, so I won't read each one individually. That concludes the operations and customer service report.
Thank you. Are there any board member questions or comments?
Good morning.
Good morning, Vice Chair.
Great report as usual. I'm always impressed with the level of thoroughness, and I for one have to say that as I listened to these reports over the last 2 years or so, not only have they been consistently good, but I get the sense that the level of service to our customer base has improved as well. And you know, you have to be around a little bit to begin to understand the nature of both the work and connected to performance. to understand the progress. You know, it's hard to see it in a snapshot, but trends speak a lot, and the trends that we've been presented here demonstrate a concerted effort to make sure that New Jersey Transit is getting back to the illustrious reputation that it once owned. So for one, I want to thank everyone for their work. Specifically, I want to thank the chief for speaking to the readiness for incident response. I think we'd all agree there's no words for that, for what happens to our children in particular. And we know that mass transit facilities are such a ripe environment and climate for the same to happen. And while there is no way to prevent in its entirety, I always rest confident knowing that the chief is focused on this issue, making sure that staff too are paying attention to this. Jim, I'd like to thank you for making mention of the May 21st incident. I think I raised it at the last board meeting that when something of significance is raised, even though it's outside of the month in question, if you could talk to us about that, would be appreciated. So thank you for that. Clearly, when folks are stranded like that, it's a big time matter, especially if you're in that train. We want to make sure that we keep our eye on that ball, and whenever those incidents arise, we do all we can to take care of those people, and importantly, to take a look at, and the fact that you're able to find a root cause, I think is important, and provide that information. And then finally, Jim, main distance between failure, our friend. The line keeps going down, right? And it has been for such a long time, and we know that securing replacement trains is definitely going to be impacted. It's already impacted. So we have I won't use the word collision because that's not good. But we got a tension that's definitely growing between mechanical breakdowns and what we thought would be some light at the end of the tunnel. and so what I'm saying to you is that this, as I'm sure it already is, has to be a matter of even great priority, because we're not sure how much the availability of new equipment is going to be impacted. We're beginning to see the early effects and early information received from manufacturers, and the impact of all of the worldwide situations. But if I were, a betting man, I'd probably conclude that there will be quite an extended rippling effect on their abilities to deliver, both in terms of components, materials, as well as even labor. So what I'm asking you to do is to help us understand specifically. If you can foresee, so for example, to be clear, so the good news is overall the percentage of cancellations is low at 6%, right? It's a lot if you happen to be in those vehicles. The question becomes, at least in my mind though, is at what point below the trend line, 0.6%, I'm sorry. At what point does the unavailability of equipment due to mechanical breakdown begin to affect your ability to deliver on-time performance, and or before we start see extraordinary actions having to be taken related to cost in particular, and or residual impact on other fleet vehicles based on the tactics that you have to use just to make service. So the point of this soliloquy is just simply to say that we really do need to keep our eyes on that as we, moving forward, talk about new cars coming online, the delays associated therewith, and this continuing decline in reliability. I mean, that's the only way I can call it. It's a continuing decline in line of vehicle availability due to reliability attributable to maintenance failures. And it's 0.6% or the 73, I guess, incidences related to mechanical failures, while in and of itself associated with overall activity, at some point there's a cost, and I want to make sure we keep our eye both in terms of the financial and economic costs as well as the costs associated with quality customer service levels. So I'll ask you to just sort of comment from your perspective of where we are with those ever-changing variables and how you see the future panning out.
All right, thanks, Vice Chair. I understand your concern. You know, and it's also something that we take a very serious focus on, our reliability. We've been seeing an uptick in some propulsion issues on the Alp 46 equipment, where that mean distance has decreased for the Alp locomotives, which is driving the numbers down a little bit. We've also seen an increase in door failures, which are driving the numbers down. You know, one of the lights at the end of the tunnel is we do have quite a few of the new Alp 45 locomotives on property, and we're working through getting them commissioned and some of the, you know, initial anomalies worked out of them. As they start to work their way into the fleet, that will start to help improve the reliability, because we'll have newer, more reliable equipment, which we can start to replace some of the older equipment. You know, we're looking at equipment that's had repeated failures, and kind of slating that to put aside as soon as the Alp 45s are available. Because obviously, looking at the numbers, we did see, if you started at the beginning of this calendar year, we did drop down in incidents from January to February, then to March. We did have an uptick in April, and then it looks like May will come in lower than April as far as incidents. But when you look at the particular incidents, the older, you know, diesel equipment, which I know we've talked about extensively, has just incredibly low reliability at about 11,000 miles. And that, when it's running 700,000 miles, you know, for this first quarter, with that many incidents, it's really driving the numbers down. So the hope is that once the new Alp 45 equipment is out in the fleet, that'll help bring the numbers up. And as we continue to work through these trending issues, right, we see door problems, the mechanical team then goes out and looks at all of the equipment, right, if we have a problem with threshold bars or whatever the analysis found, the mechanical team then goes out and checks the rest of that fleet to see if there's any other issues. So I don't think that completely answers your question. I don't know if there is a definitive answer for the question you had, but it is something we're very focused on and the team is very focused on. And I'm hoping that as we move forward in these meetings, I could be showing you better and better data.
Indeed, it's a big question, and thank you for your response. And I think we will continue to have dialogues, you know, like this in the various forums where we come together. It's important. It's systemic, and at its base, if we don't, you know, stay ahead of it, it will erode greatly into your ability to, you know, continue to meet service expectation levels. So, again, thanks everyone for a great report, and I hope everyone enjoys a quiet, peaceful holiday weekend. Thank you.
Yeah, Board Member Fulton, it's Kevin. Just like to amplify, though, to keep in perspective, and then two additional comments I'd make to Jim's. One is that we do have, rail ops meeting every 7:30 every morning. We go through all the statistics, so it is, you know, we are extremely vigilant. That's one of the key, you know, key performance indicators for the department. So, and I would just, you know, as keep in mind, despite the aging of that equipment, you know, particularly, you know, the, as you know well, the arrows, et cetera, has been covered in the press. But again, if you look at the, you know, I forget the slide number, but, you know, on the rail cancellations, 107, that's 107 out of 17,734. So, you know, percentage-wise, you know, it's still very small. I think that the, you know, Jimmy and his team are doing a great job, particularly those down on the team working down at the MMC. And the, yeah, I think if you look at the on-time performance at 94.8, you know, that's been a lot of work to get that. But, yeah, as you know, in operations, when you look at the causes, with whether it be weather or Amtrak or mechanical or whatever, you know, to have that, that kind of on-time performance takes a lot of effort. Doesn't happen by accident. So, you know, compared to, you know, 95% is our goal in our, you know, strat plan and the 10-year strategic plan. So, despite the aging fleet, and we cannot wait till we get the new multi-levels, I wish it wasn't delayed for about a year with all those parts, but still, that I think that, that that data does show you know, the extent of the effort that has been taken to deliver for our customers you know, a high level of on-time performance and minimized cancellations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Nara, did you have a question or comment?
I just had a couple quick comments. And once again, thank you, everyone, for the very comprehensive reports. I echo a lot of the comments of the Vice Chair, and I appreciate the discussion we had about sustainability, et cetera. I also wanted to just give a quick little report based on something that was raised at a prior a board meeting regarding the uncleanliness of buses on one of the Hudson bus lines. And I just wanted to give the public an update that we asked about it after a customer had raised issues, and I received an update that there was an unannounced fleet check by the regional supervisor, and all the buses were inspected and issues were noted, and there was notations of blue tape across seats where there might have been rips, and all of this was discussed with the private carrier who's being contracted there, and improvements are going to be made. And so I just want members of the public to know that we appreciate it when you let us know about a situation, and that the staff and the administration is extremely responsive. When we can point out specific issues, they go out and they try to see whether they can confirm everything that they've been told, and then certainly figure out ways to ameliorate it. So I just wanted to give credit to the staff for being responsive and allow the public to know that, you know, we are moving on things that you addressed to us. So that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other board member questions or comments? Hearing none, the next is the cost of service update. Jacqueline Stanford.
Good morning. The slide presents key performance indicators related to our cost of service, specifically farebox revenue per passenger, subsidy per passenger, cost per passenger, total cost of service, and farebox recovery. In April, across all modes and on an average per basis, per passenger basis, we recognized revenues of approximately $3.41 on costs of $14.15, for a recovery ratio of 24%. Per passenger subsidies of between $4.63 and $14.66 were required for bus, rail, and light rail service, with farebox recovery ratios of 31%, 30%, and 13% respectively. Access Link's recovery ratio was 5%. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Do any board members have any questions or comments? Vice Chair Fulton?
No questions, thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay.
Not about Jackie's report, but thank you, Jackie. But Megan, I would like to take an opportunity, as I know, as a number of the board members know from board briefings the last few days. But this is Ron Nichols' last formal meeting as in front of the public. So we would just like to recognize Ron. We're, what, 32 years of service, Ron?
Yes, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. You know, Ron has been a heart and soul in the organization in a lot of different positions, certainly ending up as head of light rail. And, Ron, I know this will allow you to go into retirement to work harder on your golf game.
Yes.
And certainly, personally, look forward to seeing you down in Naval Academy with your nephew down there for all the tailgates. But we just want to formally acknowledge for the public your service and wish you all the best.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been an honor working with the executive management team. It's been great working for New Jersey Transit for 32 years. Great experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you. Do any board members have any closing comments? Okay. Board members, that concludes the agenda for the Operations and Customer Service Committee, the Administration Committee. Oh, I'm sorry. Board Member Giblin, did you have a comment?
No, just wanted to thank everybody for all the work that went into today's presentations. We appreciate it.
Thank you. That concludes the agenda. The Administration Committee will begin at 10:30. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect from the meeting.